just heard from an analyst discussing the GOP budget proposal that Congressman Paul Ryan is expected to release today, which calls for $5 trillion in spending cuts, a partial privatization of Medicare, and a repeal of the Affordable Care Act. Now, we'll get some reaction to that proposal and discuss other issues before Congress with Wisconsin's new U.S. Senator, Tammy Baldwin. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 7:37 on this Tuesday, March 12th. If you have a question for Senator Baldwin or an issue that you would like to discuss with her, 1-800-642-1234 is the number you can call, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Tammy Baldwin is a Democratic U.S. Senator from Wisconsin. Good morning.
Good morning.
It's good to have you back on the show. First time as Senator. First time since you were sworn in as Senator. How's it going so far?
Oh, it's going really well. It's a great transition from the House to the Senate. The honor of representing the entire state is amazing, and we're getting set up and raring to go.
Well, I know you are considered, Senator Baldwin, one of the more progressive senators in Congress. Your colleague from Wisconsin, Senator Ron Johnson, is considered one of the most conservative senators in Congress. How are you getting along with him?
Well, we actually sit on several committees together, so we find ourselves together frequently. I think, you know, we're working on finding common ground on areas that are important to the state, and we know we'll have our differences, but I think that's why we work ever harder to find those areas where there is common ground.
So is there any common ground in this budget proposal that Congressman Ryan will be unveiling today? $5 trillion in spending cuts, partial privatization of Medicare, and a repeal of the Affordable Care Act.
Well, if you're asking whether there'll be common ground between Senator Johnson and myself on that, probably very little. And in fact, we both find ourselves on the Senate Budget Committee. We're going to be starting our work on the Senate budget resolution later this week. But as to the reaction to Paul Ryan's budget, you know, it isn't, in my mind, a balanced and serious solution to the challenges that we face. The fact that it is really a rehash of the budget that he introduced in 2011 and 2012 that was so resoundingly rejected by the voters, you know, which where we discussed in the last election the Ryan plan over and over again. You know, it's kind of puzzling that something that was so resoundingly rejected is yet again a proposal. But we have dual challenges in our country. They are to get our economy back on track get people back to work, and also to reduce our deficit and our debt. I've always said we have to have a budget plan that looks at both of those goals, not just one.
We talked with a professor who was a political scientist and a budget expert in our last half hour, and this professor, David Primo, said he didn't think that Paul Ryan's budget proposal was really going anywhere. But he also said that Democrats would be wise to put forth spending cuts and should deal with entitlement reform. Will the Democrats deal with entitlement reform?
Well, we're putting together, I think, what is a balanced and responsible approach to tackling these dual challenges that I was just talking about, the need to get our economy back at full throttle. And I think we can all acknowledge that our economic recovery has been slow and that it's fragile. And so the last thing we need is these policies like sequester and others that put that growth in jeopardy. But we also do need to responsibly tackle our deficit and debt. So here are the premises of the Democratic Senate budget resolution, that we need to focus on jobs, the economy, and rebuilding our middle class. We need to keep our promises to veterans, to seniors. We need to responsibly and credibly bring down the deficit and get our debt in check. And lastly, we need to stop living from fiscal crisis to fiscal crisis, from cliff to cliff. You know, this has been a bad way of doing business, to, you know, whether it's the debt ceiling limit or the sequester. People are sick of it, frankly, and want to see people work across the party aisle and have responsible solutions to these serious challenges we face. Now, as to your specific question, in reaching those four goals that I was just talking about, there are serious spending cuts, but there's also a real focus on spending in the tax code, which has been left completely untouched in the Ryan budget. We do a lot of our nation's spending within the tax code, and it's rarely scrutinized. You know, we talk about these profitable companies that pay nothing in taxes. We talk about wasteful loopholes. Well, it's time we took a strong look at those. In the area of Medicare, the Democratic budget will take some, will make some cuts, but they are not benefit cuts. And I don't frankly think that we need to go there in order to balance our budget in the long term. There are so many savings that we can extract through delivery system reforms, and that's what our budget is going to build upon.
Ted in Prairie du Chien is with us now. Hi, Ted.
Good morning. Good morning, Senator. Is there any chance Medicare would ever be allowed to negotiate the cost of prescription drugs to help in this area of controlling medical costs?
You know, that is something that I am very supportive of, and you probably heard me talk about that a fair amount in the campaign in the last year. I think that that's a key strategy to bring down prices. Believe it or not, there was a, when we passed the Medicare Part D program, there was a provision that forbade the Medicare program from negotiating with the pharmaceutical companies for better prices for seniors. And I think that's ridiculous. We do it in other programs. The VA does it and extracts significant savings on behalf of our veterans. So I think we need to do that. Now, what I would say about the budget process is, you know, the budget process in the Congress is the view at, let's say, 30,000 feet. It's not until it takes the next step that we get to the policies that allow us to reach these savings. But I think that should be number one on our list for Medicare and producing significant savings in that program over the long term.
Let's take a call from Art in Green Bay now. Hello, Art.
Hi, good morning, Jerry. Good morning to you, Kat. I was wondering whether the Senate and the President have coordinated any of their budget priorities, and I'm looking at, I guess, wondering when President Obama is going to release his budget. It seems as though he has never received any more than one vote for any of the budgets that he's put forward. None of them have been realistic in any way.
All right, and, Senator Baldwin.
Well, in terms of coordinating with Congress, we actually are going to be meeting with the president later today, and are excited about the conversations that we can have as we head into this week, where the Senate Budget Committee will mark up its budget resolution. And, of course, our intent is, once we get through that process, to bring it to the Senate floor next week. So we are right, you know, immersed in this process right now. You know, with regard to the president's budget, I have to say it's always important to see, you know, where the president, you know, is it with regard to all of this. But that said, the Congress has its own responsibility to pass its own budget, and we start with a resolution in each house. The Senate has been, let's say it politely, remiss in recent years in not doing that. this year we intend to make sure that there's a Senate budget resolution. And, you know, I think that the president's budget doesn't substitute for the work that needs to be done in both houses of Congress so that ultimately we can have a blueprint for this nation. But again, the premises that we have been embracing in putting the Senate budget together is a focus on job growth, growing our economy, strengthening our middle class, keeping our promises to veterans and to seniors, tackling in a responsible way the deficit and debt, and stop this this process of going, you know, cliff to sequester to CR expiration, all of these uncertainties that have caused so much trouble.
Our guest is U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin. And if you have a question for her, 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, hoping you'll stay tuned for another edition of On Your Money coming up after 8 o'clock. Now to more of your questions for Tammy Baldwin, Democratic U.S. Senator from Wisconsin. And our next caller is Dennis in Springfield Corners. Hi, Dennis.
Hello. Congratulations, Senator Baldwin.
Thank you.
May we fix the post office by not requiring them to fund the retirement and medical programs 75 years into the future for people who are not yet born? Perhaps we could give them a refund on their overpayments. And thank you for looking at record profits of corporations who are not paying taxes.
So Dennis asks about the post office, and I happen to sit on the Homeland Security and Government Affairs Committee, which has significant oversight responsibility for the Postal Service. We had an extensive hearing a couple of weeks ago about how to tackle some of the challenges that are being faced right now. We hope, without getting to the point where we have to drop a day of home delivery in order to do so. And one of the issues that Dennis brings up is a requirement that the Postal Service has had that really is quite unique. Other organizations haven't faced this same challenge, and that is being forced to prepay certain retiree health benefits and also particular pension benefits well beyond the expectation of any other federal agency or private organization. And I think there is fairly strong bipartisan support that this should not be a burden for the U.S. Postal Service. Now, you might ask, if there's a bipartisan agreement, why hasn't it been dealt with yet? Last session, the Senate did pass a postal reform bill. Wasn't perfect, but went a long way. It went to the House of Representatives and did not get brought forward there. We are resolved to try this again, and hopefully it'll make it through both houses of Congress in this session.
President Obama last week signed into law the Violence Against Women Act. Why did you vote in favor of this bill?
Well, it's something that I have worked on many times over the years. When I first was elected to the House of Representatives several years ago and sat on the House Judiciary Committee, we were dealing with the Violence Against Women Act and its reauthorization. Domestic violence is still a very serious problem in our country, and the Violence Against Women Act was the first national response to this this epidemic. It created a wide range of services for those who are battered, and also created a lot more public awareness so that we can intervene earlier, so that people in the medical system can understand the telltale signs when they're dealing with patients who may be presenting because of violence in their homes. And it has really been an important tool to help us reduce the epidemic of domestic violence.
Your colleague, Senator Johnson, voted against the bill, saying it's flawed. One reason, he says, is this bill allows tribal courts to prosecute men who aren't Native Americans, and he says that's unconstitutional. Do you agree with that?
I strenuously disagree, and I have to say, in meeting with individuals from many of the 11 tribes that are in the state of Wisconsin, I heard stories that would break people's hearts, where there is little, if any, recourse deal with rape and domestic violence of Native American women when the perpetrator is not a tribal member, even when it happens on tribal land. And, the law enforcement authorities that can be called in, oftentimes domestic violence isn't their highest priority. And that is, it's just unnecessary. And finally, after years and years, some ways to deal with this, in fact, the authority that you just mentioned, was included finally in this reauthorization of the Violence Against Women Act. This has been long awaited. It is long overdue, and it's one of the reasons why I so strongly supported the Violence Against Women Act.
You also recently signed on to a 35-page legal brief calling on the U.S. Supreme Court to strike down the Defense of Marriage Act.
Yes.
What's wrong with DOMA, and how confident are you that it will be overturned?
Well, the Defense of Marriage Act that was passed in the mid-90s is discriminatory in so many ways. But now that 8 states and the District of Columbia recognize the right of gay and lesbian people to marry, to recognize same-sex marriage and marriage equality, the fact that it, written into federal law, is a prohibition of recognizing those marriages, it sets up two sets of rules. In the case that is before the Supreme Court, Windsor versus the United States, plaintiff, Edie Windsor, is a perfect example of somebody who's treated differently. When her wife passed away of cancer after what was a 40-plus year relationship, her estate was subject to estate tax, whereas if she had been in an opposite sex marriage, there would have been no estate tax. And that's just one of many examples of unequal treatment. The Supreme Court's going to have to tackle this, and I am hopeful that this summer they will see that the Defense of Marriage Act codifies a discriminatory treatment on the basis of sexual orientation, and that is unconstitutional.
On Facebook, Frank writes, Senator Russ Feingold took a pledge to hold listening sessions in all 72 counties each year. Will you do the same?
You know, I intend to be very accessible and get travel extensively around the state. I think I'm going to use a different model than the hour-long listening session because I think I'm sort of looking at more thematic travel. So when there's a hot issue that's going on, to be able to tap into folks who are interested in those issues, folks who are expert from all over the state. So that's what I'm planning at this point. But I do plan on traveling around the state extensively. Every recess I've had so far has involved a lot of travel. It's a beautiful state, and I am very excited about getting around it.
Jim in East Troy, we're almost out of time, but briefly, please.
Yeah, I'm an individual, and
I'm sorry, Jim, because your phone isn't working. He wants to know, what government programs do you think should be cut?
Well, that's a great question. And in our budget proposal, I know that we are looking in particular at the ag commodities to those corporate farmers that no longer, you know, there's no longer any justification for these programs that started many years ago. We're also looking very specifically at cutting wasteful spending that's embedded in our tax code, specifically the perverse incentives that exist that help regrettably incentivize people offshoring their businesses. There's a number of expenditures embedded in our tax code that benefit profitable big oil, and we think that that those are wasteful spending also, and ought to be examined as closely as spending in our discretionary budget. So I think that's going to be one of the major focuses. In the Medicare arena, we talked earlier about the waste in the prescription drug program, because mm-hmm. the federal government can't bargain for better prices.
Well, we'll leave it there, and we hope that you'll come back and talk with us again sometime soon. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Tammy Baldwin, Democratic U.S. Senator from Wisconsin. Thanks to Bill Martins, to Amanda Magnus, and to Cynthia Schuster for producing this program. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.